Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ed Williams. It's been a crazy few weeks for our healthcare system. President Trump directed his cabinet to make it easier for businesses to refuse birth control coverage to employees. He changed the rules so insurers can offer lower cost plans with fewer benefits. And he canceled the federal subsidies that help insurance companies offset the costs of covering low income people. And now there's a new bipartisan bill out today trying to fund the subsidies for the next few years. And President Trump sent out some mixed messages about his support for that. So this morning on Let's Talk New Mexico, we're looking at what these developments mean for our state. Are you worried about increases to your health insurance premiums? What do you want to know about low-cost plans? What would losing access to family planning coverage mean for you? Our phone lines are open at 277-KUNM. That's 505-277-5866. Or send your thoughts by email to letstalk@kunm.org. Joining us to help break this down today are Pamela Herndon, director of the Southwest Women's Law Center, and Denicia Cadena, who is with Young Women United. Welcome.
Good morning, Jim. It's great to be here with you this morning.
Thanks. Well, before we get into the big changes that could be coming to healthcare in the future, let's talk a little bit about where we are now in terms of access to care for people here in New Mexico. I guess maybe a good place to start is to lay out, you know, what did the ACA, where did the ACA get us? Where are we now? Are we in a place where people can get coverage? What gaps remain?
You know, at the point where we are now, people can still get coverage, and we are definitely encouraging people to sign up for health insurance beginning on November 1st when the open enrollment period occurs. And so it's a good thing that you're doing this show today, because I think there's much confusion out there about whether or not there is insurance coverage for people. And we've been even seeing some declines in Medicaid, for example, and the people who are signing up for that and who should be signing up, all because of this conflict that's going on with respect to how this health insurance coverage is occurring.
Well, it's not just a conflict, is it? I mean, there have been actual efforts to undermine the web portals have been active for less. There's been, you know, some would say kind of a sabotage going on, at least on the sign-up process federally.
There is. And Denicia, I'm going to ask you to jump in here with me, because I've been talking to people who actually are engaged in enrolling individuals, and we can't get them to come out in the numbers that we expect them and the numbers that they should be coming out. There are just too many excuses as to why they're showing up. Now, I know that the budget for outreach and education has been cut, but you know what? People should take a vested interest in making sure that in New Mexico, where we have such a high rate of poverty, that we are getting people enrolled. What do you think, Denicia?
You know, New Mexico is one of the states most impacted by the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, many of our families are living through generations of poverty, and Medicaid expansion meant several people and thousands of people in our state were able to access health care for the first time. So looking at these systematic cuts, knowing our federal government isn't paying for outreach, is really going to hurt us in New Mexico, because we know when people have access to health care, we have healthier economies and our families can really start off on a different path.
And I'm glad you mentioned that there has been a reduction in funding, right, in terms of outreach efforts. And you guys work in outreach. Have you seen less support coming federally in terms of the money that's available? And then what impact has that had for us here, getting people signed up for health care?
So I've definitely seen less of an outreach aspect. So the money that would be coming into New Mexico would be going to outreach agencies that have the responsibility for making sure that they sign up individuals. And so what we don't see is that aggressive output on their part to make sure that people know about the insurance exchange or Medicaid signing up and how to get enrolled, for example. Before, we used to see television ads, radio advertisings, newspaper advertisements. None of that is occurring now. And so it's now, it really, that burden is falling upon nonprofits like the Southwest Women's Law Center, like Young Women United and others to pick up that slack. And that's unfortunate.
Well, the big news item, I've lost track. It's been such a roller coaster. I think it was last week, was the rollback of the contraception mandate. That is that if you're an employer, you don't want to provide birth control to your employees for moral reasons, religious reasons, well, then you don't have to. So what about family planning specifically is going on here? What impact is this going to have in New Mexico?
So the Affordable Care Act and other health care legislation already have provisions around religious refusals. And what the Trump administration did last week was say that any employer could deny access to contraception in their health plan for moral reasons. That's already being contested in the courts because it is, of course, so vague. What does a moral objection to contraception look like? Here in New Mexico, we know that contraception is needed health care. This isn't something that women should have to pay for themselves. Contraception means that families can decide if and when they become pregnant, and that means they can plan their economic futures.
And I want to pick up on the economic aspect of that, Ed, because if we look at the fact that women in New Mexico particularly are not paid the same as white non-Hispanic men, looking at the women of color particularly, we're looking at the fact that Native American women are getting paid somewhere around 54 cents to the dollar, and we look at Hispanic women being paid even less than that. And so just on September 25th, for example, it took 21 months for a Native American woman to earn what a white non-Hispanic man earns in a year. And so if you put that together, combined with the fact that now women have to pay for their own contraceptives because there's been a decision made that insurance companies and employers no longer have to cover it, that's a problem. That is a huge problem, particularly in a state like ours, where the majority of the population is comprised of women.
How many people do get this kind of employer-provided coverage that could be affected here by, you know, not getting birth control anymore?
So let me just tell you that there are 454,000 women in New Mexico who are childbearing age and who are working. So that's the number that we look at for purposes of determining what kind of coverage could be cut back. That's a huge number. And that's a number that people in New Mexico, particularly the women, should stand up and say, we're not going to take this. You know what? We're working. We should be covered. And employers, you need to stand up and do the right thing.
And I think these cuts just aren't really based in faith or morality. We know that a majority of Americans will use or be partnered with someone who will use contraception in their lifetime. Contraception access is widely supported and recognized as needed health care. So this is really about taking these important decisions out of the hands of women. And, you know, New Mexicans just don't believe in that.
It's a little confusing to me what the exemption actually is, because it's not just a religious exemption, right? It's saying you have a strong moral conviction. I don't even know how you test for a strongly held or a sincerely held religious belief. I think that's the wording in the law, much less a moral conviction. I mean, couldn't you just say I'm morally opposed and then not have to, you know, shell out the extra cash to provide contraception coverage? I mean, how do you test? Is there a test?
You know, that's a good question. We'd like to see what test the federal government has devised to determine whether or not it's a legitimate test. We haven't seen one. The only thing we've seen is a lot of rules and rollback language that says that the federal requirement that employers must include birth control coverage is what could be in place now. And so there is no litmus test. That just seems to be a test that has no basis whatsoever, other than somebody just doesn't want to make this payment for women.
And this is the most recent development in strong opposition that's been forming to, you know, in some businesses to providing this kind of coverage. I mean, our listeners will remember the Hobby Lobby case, the Supreme Court case that was just a few years back. And in that decision, I believe the court said that you have to respect religious beliefs, but you still have to make sure that women have access to birth control, right? So kind of passed it on to the insurers. And there are religious exemptions for, you know, employers like churches and things like that that have this workaround. So I wonder if does this new rule jibe with the spirit of the Hobby Lobby case, in your opinion, Pamela?
It does not, because under the Hobby Lobby case, what happened was that the Obama administration allowed or provided another means for contraceptive coverage to occur for women who work for employers who objected. But we don't see that additional coverage occurring under the new federal mandate, and so that causes us great concern. Like, how are women now going to pay for this coverage? As I indicated, already they're being underpaid, and so now we're putting another burden on top of that.
I see. But what about the argument that business owners, you know, shouldn't be forced to do something that goes against their values? I mean, surely there's some middle ground that could be reached here.
You know, the fact is, Ed, is that we all have different moral values and faith positions on when life begins, on what contraception should look like, on what abortion access should look like. But the fact is, we don't need our employers to regulate that. What we need to build healthy economies is making sure that women and families have access to the care they need when they need it. And, you know, allowing employers to pick and choose what that looks like really creates a complicated situation for families that we can't navigate. Why birth control should be the one issue that employers can decide on is really about, you know, not allowing women to make their own decisions.
And then at what point is this going to stop? You know, maybe employers are going to say, well, I don't like people who wear red shirts at all. So if you wear a red shirt, I'm going to fire you, or I'm no longer going to cover insurance for you. Or if you wear long hair, I mean, there has to be a stop to this at some point in time. And to just unnecessarily pick out birth control as a method for which they will no longer cover is untenable, is what I would say to you today.
And just in that specific example, within the same period, Attorney General Sessions also rolled back protections for transgender people, saying that laws protecting people on the basis of sexual orientation or gender or race didn't extend to gender identity and transgender people. So this just isn't an attack on women, but is really this administration has been consistently undermining marginalized people and making it harder for us to access care.
Well, going back to that slippery slope argument, Pamela, that you brought up, I mean, the Trump administration has been very clear that this is really about religious freedom. And the need to protect the religious freedom of business owners. And so, I mean, maybe wearing red shirts might be a little bit of a jump there. But some religious groups do object to other, you know, types of medical procedures. I mean, to go to an extreme, there's some religious groups that don't believe in medicine at all and prefer prayer as the answer. So is it, though, a stretch to say that at some point, if we continue down this line of thinking, that you could have an employer just say, it's not just contraception, I object to this other procedure, I don't believe in hip replacements, whatever, and is there some kind of possibility really that could be the way that we're going?
You know, that's a really good question, Ed, and so it's a question that's actually very scary to us because there are, as you indicated, employers who don't believe in blood transfusions, who don't believe in any other type of intervention through a medical process. But then just because they don't believe in that method does not mean that you should impose your beliefs upon an entire group of people in a population who are there to help work and advance a community. So, yes, that does scare us, and that could possibly happen. So if we don't stand up and put a stop to where these incidences are occurring now, who is to say just how far they will go?
And I guess that's the paradox we're in, because opponents of the Affordable Care Act say, you know, providing birth control, being forced to, that's imposing beliefs on them. And then, you know, others are saying Trump's rollback seems to be doing the same thing. People, you know, they're imposing one set of beliefs on other people. I'm not sure how we get out of that. But if you think we should be letting businesses decide what kind of coverage they offer, or is this giving too much leverage to one point of view regarding healthcare, the role of government, give us a call. 877-899-5866 is the number to give to call here. And Denisia, I know that you've worked on several initiatives making access to birth control easier. One of those is making it available by pharmacist prescription, right?
Sure. So in June, New Mexico became the fourth state in the country to allow pharmacists to prescribe birth control. So what this means is that a woman or person could go into a pharmacy, have a conversation with the pharmacist about her medical history and counterindications, and be prescribed and get filled contraception in the same day. So, you know, in our rural state where people still have to drive to access water sometimes, contraception shouldn't be another burden. And it's a really timely and pressing issue. You can't often wait 3 months to get in to see a doctor to access contraception. So having this next day access to care is going to be really profoundly meaningful for our state.
Is that going to be impacted in any way by the employer rollback? I suppose not, because this is pharmacists, not employers, making it available.
So, you know, we're hopeful that insurers will cover this pharmacist prescribing in New Mexico. So it could be impacted by these changes, you know, but we are also working to put some of these incredible provisions in the Affordable Care Act that allowed no coverage, no copay for contraception, into state law here in New Mexico, so that even if the federal law does fall, New Mexican families will still have access to that coverage.
But Ed, you know, you have brought up another interesting point. What is happening with respect to pharmacists is some of them are objecting to filling some birth control prescriptions because it's against their religious beliefs. Now, I mean, at some point in time, where does this also stop? So we have some big box stores that are allowing their pharmacists to make those decisions that they're not going to fill those prescriptions. And we say, you know, that's okay. But it's up to the big box stores to then have other people on staff who will be making that coverage available. No woman should be displaced simply because a pharmacist says it's against my religious belief to fill your prescription.
Well, we're up against a break right now. We're talking about the recent federal changes to the healthcare system and what they mean for us here in New Mexico. We'll take a short break here and we'll be back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from Kingston Residents of Santa Fe, an independent assisted and memory care community, celebrating 30 years of caring for families in Santa Fe. Kingston Residents of Santa Fe focuses on living well at any age. KingstonHealthcare.com.
Johannes Brahms knew when to phone a friend. When Brahms got stuck writing his violin concerto, he got help from Joseph Joachim, one of the great violinists of the day. Joshua Bell says the piece is so much better because of that collaboration. Bell and the Brahms Concerto on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is KUNM 89.9, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico, and we're back talking about President Trump's rollback of family planning coverage, changes to the rules governing health insurance and state exchanges, and the end of federal subsidies to insurers. Do you get your coverage from your employer, from the state exchange? Either way, there could be big changes coming your way. What do you think these moves by the White House mean for you and your family, and what should happen next? Give us a call. The number is 877-899-5866. That's 877-899-KUNM. You can also join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program and we're using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. So we've been talking about the contraception coverage rollback, but just a few days after that move by the White House, President Trump announced he was canceling the cost-sharing subsidies to insurers. So now I guess this is looking like a much bigger issue than just contraception or the type of plan you can buy. I mean, it's a question of whether the Trump administration is actually undoing the ACA altogether and impacting health coverage across the board. So let's go to Janice Torres. She's on the line with us, and Janice is chief of staff at Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Mexico. Janice, hi. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I know that Blue Cross has had some difficulty making it work with the state exchange in New Mexico over the last possible years, and at one point even pulled out of the exchange. Tell us how the ACA has been working for you so far. What are some of the challenges that you've been dealing with?
So we're pleased to be able to participate on the exchange this year, and just to kind of clarify, we didn't really pull out of the exchange. Our rates did not get approved at that time, but we're pleased to be back on the state on the exchange, offering individual products both on and off exchange, and ACA has been a little challenging, just in general, but we believe that there's some challenges with the executive order that President Trump issued on October 12th that we think are important to address.
So what about these latest developments concerns you? What are those points you're talking about?
Well, there's some points. Obviously, selling across state lines, association health plans, short-term limited duration insurance, and health reimbursement arrangements. I think the first one is selling across state lines. We believe that state and federal policy changes that allow insurers to sell products in different states without complying with local laws would take away important protections from consumers and threaten the stability of their insurance coverage. There's really no way to protect consumers with health plans that don't have to be regulated in New Mexico.
So would Blue Cross Blue Shield consider offering a plan to somebody from, say, Texas or Colorado? Someone out of state could buy a plan on your platform here?
Well, currently, consumers can purchase a health plan from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas. Or from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Colorado, and they're regulated in those particular states, and that's what we believe is important protections.
Oh, so you mean people can already buy a plan from another state? I'm sorry.
They can buy plans that are regulated in their particular states. And as you probably know, health plans in New Mexico, they work with local providers. They contract with local providers to provide services to their members. Plans from other states may not have the same ability to contract with providers in the states where consumers live.
Pamela and Denicia, you both work on, you know, sign up advocacy, getting people signed up for the exchange, and I'm sure some of the people you're working with are signing up on Blue Cross Blue Shield. How are you dealing with this possibility of buying across state lines? Is that a problem for explaining to people their options? What's going on from your perspective?
Well, actually, I think Janice is correct. I think that different states offer different protections. And so insurance companies generally, when they come in the state of New Mexico, have to register with the insurance office of the superintendent of insurance, indicating the insurance plans that they're going to make available. And sometimes we may provide better protections for individuals buying insurance in our state than another state would. So I would like to see insurance companies stay within the borders of their state, and that's important, really, for consumer protection.
Yeah, absolutely. The Office of the Superintendent of Insurance provides an important protection for consumers that if they're having an issue with their plan, if they're not getting the coverage they need, that they have recourse to be able to call the Office of the Superintendent and address those issues. So it's incredibly important for consumer protection.
Janice, I want to get to the cut of the federal subsidies to insurers. And let's just be clear here that the subsidies being cut, they're called CSRs, cost-sharing reductions. These are not subsidies to individual people buying insurance. These are subsidies that insurance companies get in order to help them cover costs, especially of covering low-income people. I know there's a lot of confusion out there on that point right now. What's the position that Blue Cross is in right now with the loss of these subsidies? What does this mean for your customers, and what does this mean for you as a company?
Well, as far as subsidies, we certainly want to encourage President Trump to continue funding CSRs for 2019 and beyond as long as CSR benefit is required. Right now, this does not impact consumers. Those that receive subsidies will continue receiving subsidies. However, the cost of those subsidies are spread across silver plans, so it does impact the cost of the products.
So what are you telling your customers about their health plans? Should they be expecting rate hikes in the future because of this uncertainty and the loss of subsidies?
I think we all saw rate increases in the individual market this year.
And that was because of the anticipation that you might be seeing some of the changes that have actually come to pass in the last few weeks?
Obviously, there's been changes just for the contingencies of not knowing.
Mm-hmm. So let me just ask Janice this question. So Janice, with the cutback on the subsidies, it's not necessarily that they would see a rate increase, but what they will see is an increase in the amount of money that they have to pay, particularly if they're buying on a silver plan because the subsidy isn't there. Do you think that would be a fair statement?
members that receive subsidies will continue to receive subsidies. They're just not funded through the government. However, the cost of those subsidies are spread across the Silver Plan. So members that don't receive subsidies will see an impact.
Right. Individuals will get subsidies. It's kind of confusing because we're talking about subsidies and people are like, well, do I get subsidies? And the insurance companies get their own subsidies. So what you're saying is individuals who receive subsidies, that's a separate issue. And you as a company, you're having to deal with this potential loss of federal subsidies. And so people that are buying plans, at least for now, shouldn't worry about losing their subsidies. Right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we could clear that up. Janice, I wonder, you know, one of the things that happened last week was an easing back on the rules of the kinds of plans that insurers can provide. So now, if I'm correct, there's the possibility of offering lower cost plans with a lot fewer benefits. Is that something that Blue Cross plans to do, to offer those kinds of, you know, cheaper plans that might not have as good of or as comprehensive of coverage?
So there's in the executive order, they talk about association health plans. So any effort to expand access to association health plans, they must ensure state regulatory oversight and provide the same set of rules for all entities offering coverage to individuals and employers. This just helps stabilize the individual market. Another component that came up is the short-term limited duration insurance. So the current 3-month limit on short-term limited duration contracts that's currently established through the Health and Human Services regulations, that should be retained. So that allowing for medically underwritten short-term policies of longer duration, that segregates the individual market. And what happens is that siphons out healthy enrollees from the ACA compliant markets due to lower premium costs.
And that's that death spiral that we keep hearing about, right?
It is challenging. So we urge regulators to adopt state regulations that limit short-term duration policies to 3 months to protect the individual market. So if you allow for segregated markets or these types of plans, what happens is one for healthy and one for sick, that raises the premiums and eliminates choice across those with pre-existing conditions.
Well, Janice, thanks so much for joining us to clarify those things. And I want to go to another call now. Fred is on the line. And Fred, you have a comment on contraception. Right?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go right ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just been listening, you know, to the topic, and I know yesterday they announced it was going to be on this. So I wanted to make sure and I comment a little bit. You know, so far I've been hearing, and please take this in a positive way, it's pretty much one-sided. The woman takes care of the contraceptive part. But, you know, in a partnership relationship, the male should also be involved in some type of contraceptive. Is he going to father a child that later on is going to have to be taken care of by the government? And then, again, what about STDs? I mean, contraceptives don't prevent STDs. Now, is insurance, let's say, a promiscuous lifestyle of a man or a woman, and then that subjects them to more infections or diseases, HIV or even AIDS, that'll have to be a long-term more burden on insurances. So there's a broad scope to look here, you know, as far as the contraceptive part, the responsibility of a man and a woman both, if they're gonna decide to have sex, and then the responsibility of sharing both the responsibility of later on.
That's a good point, Fred. I guess the question though is who has to pay for the contraception? It's usually falling on the woman, unless I mean you have a, you know, some kind of arrangement with your partner for cost sharing. What about Fred's comment that it's not just we shouldn't just be talking about contraception on the female side?
Fred, I'm so glad that you brought that into the conversation because you're absolutely right. One of the serious flaws that I see in the Affordable Care Act in the contraception coverage is that they only cover coverage for women. So female sterilization was covered, but not vasectomies for men. External condoms were not covered. So this year in New Mexico's legislative session, we pursued a contraception equity bill, and that did include coverage for men. You know, we heard from Med around the state, from legislators themselves, to say, you know, when you're making the decision to have sex, it's really about both people involved, and men are included in those decisions. So our state law did include coverage for vasectomies, did include coverage for condoms, including over the counter. And so, you know, it's critical that we look at sexual health from a lens that includes STI prevention and really includes men in these important decisions.
And I would also like to add, Denicia, that if we're looking at the fact that men do have a responsibility for contraception here, we should also look at the fact that the majority of the people who are heading up these companies are men. So they shouldn't be taking the position that they're not going to cover contraception for women. So that's also something to think of in terms of the gender coverage that we're discussing at this point.
I do want to step back a minute and shift topics again, much like our crazy week. I want to get back to the insurance issue because we have Kika Pena on the phone with us. Kika is Life and Health Division Director with the New Mexico Office of the Superintendent of Insurance. And Kika, thank you for joining us.
Sure thing. Good morning.
Good morning. And I'm sure we'll have a chance to circle back to birth control after, but I do want to point out some of the things that that Janice from Blue Cross said. Now, Kika, OSI Superintendent John Franchini was one of many state insurance chiefs to sign a letter opposing the Graham-Cassidy health care bill. That was the latest iteration of three, I think, of attempts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. So I wonder, what's the reaction over at OSI to this latest development of the decision to end federal subsidies?
Well, we took it's been a very unstable year for the exchange. We tried to stabilize something that was very unstable. We took a proactive approach, and we allowed the carriers to not account for the cost sharing. So they did do that load before it was decided that they couldn't do it, before Trump signed the order. So that was already in place, hence the reason that the rates have gone up significantly.
Right. It seems like most carriers saw this possibility coming and decided to raise their rates in order to, you know, kind of protect themselves if they lost the subsidies through 2018.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about this new bill? Today there's, I think the text was just got, NPR just got a hold of the text. I don't think it's been even introduced formally in Congress, but I think it's supposed to be today. There's a new bipartisan bill that would extend the cost-sharing reduction subsidies for 2 years. Would this solve this instability that we're seeing in New Mexico, at least in the short term?
For short term, it would. I mean, we'd have to look at it again and address it when the time comes, kind of like everything else this year.
Just wait and see and then react, I guess. That's kind of
the MO. We'd respond more so than react.
Okay.
So,
well, Janice Torres from Blue Cross Blue Shield was just mentioning that, you know, it would be it could be beneficial if the state was able to step in to prevent some kind of, you know, of subpar coverage for cheap insurance plans. And, you know, that's one of the possibilities. Now, the executive order last week says that, you know, insurers should be able to provide plans with less coverage that will cost less money, plans that would be, you know, probably more attractive to younger, healthier people. And the concern there is that, well, that'll segregate off all the healthy people and send everything into chaos. Is that a concern that your office shares, and would you step in to prevent that if it did happen?
Talk about short-term policy and association plans. So, you know, those plans are lacking range of benefits and protections that the qualified health plans have. They do not include all the essential health benefits. They may have benefit limits and caps. They may have pre-existing condition exclusions. So they can be very misleading. If the unrestricted sale of these types of plans or coverage were to be allowed, it could presumably draw healthier individuals into this less robust coverage and away from comprehensive coverage through the individual market. This split of the individual risk pool will likely cause premiums to even raise higher for the comprehensive individual major medical market. And with rising premiums for comprehensive coverage, sicker individuals and individuals who have fled to these sort of types of plans may no longer be able to afford coverage when they do need it.
And did you say that the Office of the Superintendent of Insurance could step in to prevent that, or is that something that the state doesn't have the power to do?
We are evaluating the regulatory options.
I see.
On both of these.
Let's go to a phone call really quickly. We have Victoria on the line from Santa Fe.
Hello.
Hi, Victoria. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you for doing this program.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I just want to say that healthcare is not a commodity. It is a public service. And I want to see insurance out of healthcare. It adds nothing to the healthcare other than cost. We pay something like 25% more for healthcare than civilized countries, and we get less. We need Bernie Sanders' single-payer system.
Well, Victoria, I think a lot of people feel that way, but it is the system we're in. And don't you think that, you know, at least making it work how it is for now is probably the way to go? Or do you think that we should, you know, along the other lines of even the Republican Party, repeal and replace, maybe find something completely different?
Yes, change the system. Join the civilized world. Insurance has no part in the healthcare system.
Hmm. Is that something you guys hear a lot? Because I know it's a sticky situation, right? Like, the system that we're in obviously has a lot of problems, and we've been seeing problem after problem lately. So I think a lot of people are disillusioned with the way the system works, or saying we need to change it altogether.
Well, I know that when we are advocating and outreaching in the community, there is a great deal of discussion about Bernie Sanders' plan for making sure that people have the appropriate health care. But the other thing that we also notice when we are out in the field is that people do want to make sure that the provisions that are in place right now are working in their best interest. And it is true that of all of the countries around the world, ours probably has the least protections with respect to health care in many instances. And so there are changes that need to be made. But we also understand that right now this is, as you indicated, Ed, this is the process that we have. And so as we step to move into a better process, we need to make this one as best, the best that we possibly can make it.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico, and we're talking today about President Trump's recent moves to knock down the Affordable Care Act. Would you buy a cheaper plan with fewer benefits, or a plan from Texas or Arizona? Or are you a business owner who could benefit from fewer rules on the coverage you provide? What would losing your family planning coverage mean for you and your family? Call us now. 277-5866 is the number, 277-5866, or send an email to letstalk@kunm.org. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back for your calls.
Did the September pledge drive catch you off guard? NPR tried a new approach this year, but as a result, we're still waiting to hear from some members who usually renew in October. If you're one, you'll get a letter from us with a Sam Scott painting and humorous David Sedaris on the envelope. Please stay with us through 2018. We hope to hear from you this month, either by mail or online at kunm.org.
I'm Tara Gatewood, host of Native America Calling. When we reopen our electronic talking circle, we'll visit with longtime experts about how recognition of domestic violence has changed over the years. We'll also discuss how approaches to address domestic violence have evolved. We hope you can join us for this discussion.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is KUNM, and this is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico. That's a KUNM reporting project providing in-depth investigative coverage of public health and the impacts of poverty in our state. And we have Kika Pena on the line from the Office of Superintendent of Insurance. And before we let you go, Kika, I want to ask you one more question. And that is, we mentioned before the break that there's a lot of insurers who have raise their rates in order to compensate for this instability and the loss of federal subsidies. And that keeps everything solid through 2018. What about after that? What steps is OSI taking in order to keep that stability through 2019?
Well, that's kind of hard to say because we don't know what's going to trickle down from the federal government. So on our part, it's this year was kind of a surprise and a very unstable year. So it's hard to say what we're going to do next year. Of course, we'll work with the carriers. We tried to keep all our carriers on the exchange this year. We'll do the same thing next year and just try to stabilize a very unstable environment. It really all depends on what comes down from the federal government. But, you know, I want to reiterate that the CSRs do not affect the income-qualified financial assistance, such as the consumer cost-sharing reductions themselves or the consumer's advance premium tax credits. What this does is it left the burden on the carriers to subsidize this.
Okay. Well, Kika, thank you for joining us. I appreciate that. And let's go to another call from Sarah. Sarah's in Albuquerque and has a comment on children. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Are you with us?
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Yeah, you know, I just want to emphasize that, you know, New Mexico, we were ranked number one in child poverty. So 33% of our children under the age of five are living in poverty. And, you know, if these women, you know, lack access to birth control, just think about how many unwanted children that will be starving and freezing in our state, you know?
That's a good point.
So that's my emphasis. So what you're saying is they're going to cut back on the women's access to birth control, the employers will not be able to pay for it. You know, that means that we're just going to have more starving children that, and our state is poor to feed them or house them or clothe them. You know, it's just going to compound our problem here.
Kids Count, the Annie E. Casey Foundation's Kids Count survey today, I think, came out with new statistics that said over 50% of kids in New Mexico have been facing traumatic experiences. And, you know, the children here definitely do have, you know, in a lot of times a tough struggle ahead of them. But, you know, we've been talking about all these federal changes. This is a good point, a good time to bring in some of the local changes that are on the horizon for Medicaid. And that, of course, could affect kids. What are some of those changes that we're looking at the state level, Pamela, in terms of cuts to Medicaid?
You know, that is a great point to bring up right about now, because not only looking at the federal aspect and what's happening with women, but looking at children in terms of the centennial care that the state of New Mexico is proposing in its new Medicare waiver plan. So the proposal includes charging excessive patient fees in the form of copayments and premiums, even to children in CHIP. And that's where the process gets to be really untenable. So the working disabled and low-income adults living just above the poverty line are going to be stuck and burdened with additional fees under the proposals that the Human Services Department for the state of New Mexico are proposing under the Centennial Care 2.0. Denise, there, what about some others of the things that we've been talking about?
Yeah, Ed, you brought us the really severe challenges of people in poverty in our state. And just as Pamela is sharing, these Medicaid changes would require co-pays for the first time, would require deductibles. And we know that our New Mexican families just can't afford one more thing. We're already struggling. Of course, to address that, we need to build healthier economies, but this isn't the right change for New Mexico right now. In the area of family planning, we do see some exciting changes in the Centennial Care Waiver. There is a provision in there to help with some of the stocking fees around long-acting reversible contraception, so IUDs and implants, that we think will really improve access. But as we know very well, family planning isn't the only kind of care that people need in our state. People have hearts and eyes and ears and bodies, and we just need access to a full range of healthcare here in New Mexico.
And you brought up IUDs, and this is kind of what's confusing, because in the news over the last couple of days is, you know, the fact that IUDs are going to get enormously more expensive under the federal proposals, but yet we have some protections at the state level. I think a lot of people are asking, you know, where are we? We have two layers of things going on, and I think people are completely unsure of where they stand and where they will stand.
Ed, as you've mentioned time and time again, is that just we're living in confusing times. Each day we're getting a new story on what healthcare coverage will look like in our country. But I know that in New Mexico, we're going to fight tooth and nail for our coverage at the federal level, but that we also want to work hard to ensure every protection we have in state law, looking at contraception access, access to mental health care and health care overall.
And let me just add, with respect to access to contraceptive care, particularly for women living in rural areas, making sure that these LARCs, long-acting reversible contraceptives, also known as IUDs, are available to them, because the access in terms of doctors being in those rural areas and them having access to other types of contraception may be very difficult. But if LARCs are available to them on a more readily available basis, then that's a better protection for women in determining and spacing their children.
You're pointing out, I think, a good point, which is that rural areas stand to be, you know, impacted a little bit heavier than these urban areas, especially New Mexico, because we have such a shortage of places for people to get care and of doctors in those areas.
That's exactly right. And what we are really working very hard to do is to make sure that there are healthcare professionals within these rural areas who can insert LARCs and who are proficient in those areas. And as we look at all sorts of creative ways in which to help train individuals, we are trying to make sure that women who are in these rural areas are not disadvantaged just because they don't live in a big city.
277-5866 is the number to call. And I just cut you off, Denisia.
Oh, like I was saying before, New Mexico just became the fourth state where pharmacists can prescribe contraception. This is so important to me as someone who was raised in rural New Mexico, because we know that two of our New Mexico counties have no primary care providers. All of our counties are suffering provider shortages, but someone will have a grocery store that has a pharmacy in their local neighborhood. In these frontier communities, even if it's folks located very rurally. So I think this is one of the most important wins our state has seen in a while, and I'm excited for the expanded access it'll bring.
And we can't, Ed, forget about the women who live on tribal lands and are Native American women who have to sometimes travel long distances just to find medical care and to medical attention, like in Crown Point, for example. I mean, so these are the many, many types of issues that we are facing and looking to make sure that women's health care is coverage.
277-5866 is the number to call. We want to hear from you. And let's go from the phone to the phones right now. We have Chris on the line from Albuquerque. Hi, Chris. Chris, are you there?
Hello. Yes.
Hi.
Yes. I called in. I want to share a search story with you. About 15 years ago, when I was self-employed, and I'm still self-employed, I had an individual coverage policy with Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Mexico. And I had teenage children. And my teenage child needed emergency psychiatric care. And she was admitted to a facility here in New Mexico. When we go to admit her, we find that my insurance coverage doesn't have mental health care coverage. And the whole adventure in and out of hospital a couple of times cost about $35,000 on my credit cards. Because of that lack of mental health care coverage. And it's my understanding that along with the Affordable Health Care Act came something called mental health care parity. And that $35,000 credit card bills. I ended up refinancing my home to pay those off.
Yeah,
to manage
that's a
the
lot
debt,
of money.
Has impacted me over time. Like, my home would have been paid off in 3 years from now. I would be in my late 50s and have my home paid off. But as a result, my mortgage payment is higher, and I have another 22 years to pay off my home. So 20 years or so. So that was a huge impact on my lifelong. And I want to know if these catastrophic policies come back, if we're also going to lose the mental health care parity portion of the law.
And Chris, you're talking, this all happened before the Affordable Care Act.
Well before the Affordable Care Act.
And
but
so if you had this
individual policy, so it was a similar to catastrophic care. You know, it's what I could afford as a self-employed individual.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Chris. And I wonder if Pamela, Denicia, you guys know the answer to her question. Are we looking at a return to this kind of scenario in terms of mental health parity?
Chris, I'm so glad that you brought that to us. And I think, unfortunately, too many of our New Mexico families have faced that scenario. You know, our state has seen such a behavioral health care crisis, you know, with the shutting down of so many of our local providers. Unfortunately, I do think that that's a possibility. Some of these changes under the Affordable Care Act would remove essential health care benefits. You know, and as someone who has lived with mental health issues, who has seen that in my family, I know just how critical mental health care is. And that should absolutely be an essential healthcare service. I unfortunately don't think that's protected in the changes that we have to come. And, you know, Pamela mentioned this earlier, you know, what's next when we start chipping away at what healthcare looks like? Our families get compromised in these really serious ways.
We don't know, though, that that's what's happening, do we? I mean, that's just a possibility that people have been raising, that these benefits could be cut.
Right, because under the Affordable Care Act right now, individuals are allowed some mental health care visits that would be covered as an essential benefit. So they haven't come out specifically in the budget plan that's been presented by President Trump. But, you know, we just don't know what tomorrow's going to hold.
We have time for one more call, and I want to rush to it. Pat is on the phone with us from Albuquerque. Hi, Pat. Thank you for your call.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah, go right ahead. What's your question?
Okay. I have insurance with the exchange and have had a policy with Molina, have a silver plan. It was it's been a very good plan. I've been very happy with it. I am paying $77 a month, and that's been very affordable for me. And I received a letter last week telling me that my same plan, if I wanted to keep it, starting in January, would be $505 a month. And I had heard that, you know, there was going to be an increase, that there might be a 40% increase or something like that. But I was not prepared for a 400% increase. Mm. And I just would like to know why. Why? How can that be right. justified?
Do you guys have a response to that? That is a big jump.
That is a big jump. And let me just tell you what we are afraid of, Chris, that will happen is that we're afraid that people are going to stop buying health insurance. And so they'll end up using the emergency rooms for their health care from now on. So we'll be taking a giant step backwards because they can't afford these insurance policies. There, of course, would be no penalty for not having insurance. And there is absolutely no reason for that. It's just a heartless decision by those who are making the decision to cut subsidies and to make insurance prices rise the way in which they are.
And strong emotions coming through here, but you know, the National Women's Law Center is filing a lawsuit against the contraception rules. Does Southwest Women's Law Center plan on pursuing any legal avenues going forward, or Young Women United?
Young Women United will be looking to the state legislature, like I said, to put some of these great protections around contraception and healthcare overall into our state statute, so that, you know, no matter what chaotic situation we're facing at the national level, we can get this care in our communities.
And I just want to say, yes, the Southwest Women's Law Center is looking to file those litigation claims, and we're looking for attorneys to step up and to provide those pro bono services to help with impact litigation that will affect women and others with respect to their access to health care.
Well, that's all the time we have this morning. If you missed part of the program or you want to hear it again, you can find this and other past episodes on our website, kunm.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. I want to thank our guests, Pamela Herndon of the Southwest Women's Law Center, Denicia Cadena of Young Women United, Janice Torres of Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Mexico, and Kika Pena of the New Mexico Office of the Superintendent of Insurance. Next week on the show, we'll be looking at ways communities in New Mexico have been responding to changes in the economic landscape as part of a collaboration between KUNM and the Solutions Journalism Network. We'll hear from reporters about their stories about what works and what doesn't. Marino Spencer engineered the program today. Victor Onimole answered the phone. Sarah Trujillo live tweeted the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the McCune Charitable Foundation. Find out more at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening. This is Let's Talk New Mexico.